All right, so Jill, if you'll start us off, just a little quick check-in from the last few hours or just things that you're thinking about today.
I watched the video that Susan sent on the Facebook, and that was, I found that really interesting. And my thoughts kind of around it are, I mean, I am a learner and I'm continuously learning, but that made me think about how it's okay to have someone coach you. And sometimes I feel like in the position we're in, we need to know everything. So it just opened that up for me. And then thinking about yesterday, just thinking about focusing on where and when things are working in terms of the things I brought up yesterday and trying to replicate that. And being more confident in myself and presenting a process.
All right, Susan.
I felt kind of tired after yesterday. No, but one of the things I did, one of the questions that was posed to me yesterday was about what do people thank you for? And I thought it was a really interesting question. And I was sort of going off the top of my head, obviously, when I answered. But I remembered last night that our team had done this activity several years ago where everybody had an index card for everybody. And you just wrote kind of, why you were grateful to them for being a colleague or a friend or whatever, kind of highlighting strengths. And so I dug them out. I've kept them in this old ratty envelope and I just reread them last night. And I was pretty on with what people have thanked me for or felt grateful for. I did find a lot of comments about sort of what Jill was just saying, also knowing the right answer when our team needs it. So that was interesting and just made me think. But it was fun to reread those. It was nice.
Good, good. Dana? Just make sure, there you go.
So I had a lot of feelings yesterday and last night. I really felt thankful for all of you just listening. Like I really felt like, wow, people were just there to listen and to hear. And then along that, I also felt incredibly guilty. I found myself feeling really guilty for, I felt like I was complaining. And at a certain point, I was like, gosh, Dana, just suck it up. Put your big girl panties on and just move on. So I don't know. I found myself kind of conflicted, like I really felt like appreciative of all of you, and but then I felt like, what are you complaining about? Like this is nothing, It's like this is, I don't know. That's me. I also did take the time to review my superpowers and revisited that. I forgot who had asked me that question, but I took the time to review that. Thank you. And I had not remembered this from the last time I had done that little assessment, but the one that I score the highest in is solutionary, but everything is so close. So I think I'm a little muddled because my organizer and my unifier are really like tied just about. And so I took some time to kind of read through those and to reflect on those a little bit. That was it. I did feel rested at the end of the night. I took a good walk last night and kind of let some things stew a little bit, but that thankfulness and that guilt kind of kept coming back at me, and that I was kind of like conflicted a little bit. So, but thank you all.
And on notes of appreciation, thanks for not jumping right in, guys, trying to fix that for Dana or to assure her that she didn't have any reason to feel guilty. That was really good restraint if any of you felt the knee jerk to like commiserate or reassure her, because that's really good insight for her, and it's for her to figure out why those juxtapositions of emotions are there, or why they came up together. And if anybody has a question or wants to share something down the road, those are good opportunities. But I just wanted to thank you guys for holding that space for her. All right, so we're ready to go back into hot seat mode. And Heidi, you're up first today. And I'll watch the time and be taking notes, and whether I need to, I try not to ask any questions, but sometimes I just want to too. But we'll just see how it goes. And if anybody has any questions from yesterday, you know, say them. But otherwise, there's no need to paraphrase or what do you call it? There's a word. But anyway, when you temper what you're about to ask, just know we're all in this together and we're all just trying. And sometimes I think I have the best question ever and it falls flat. And other times I think it's like, who knows? And then somebody's like, that's really insightful, because it just depends on the person and where they are in the moment. It could be one day we're just like the best ever, and the next time we don't even have a question to ask. And that's okay too. I don't know if I mentioned that yesterday, but you don't have to feel like, well, I haven't gone yet and they asked me a really good question, now the stakes are high. Like, let all of that go. All right. All right. So whenever you're ready, Heidi.
I guess I'll have to unmute for you to actually hear me. Well, I guess one of the reasons it's called a hot seat is because there's a little bit of nervousness that goes along with this. Feels a little like my stomach's a little bit queasy. And as I was thinking, not just yesterday, but for many days, about, you know, like, what's my challenge or my issue that I want to bring before you, I think even wrestling with what that is part of what I'm bringing to you. So I think what I settled on is I'm struggling with kind of this balance between feeling prepared for things and being prepared, what I think is prepared for something, and mostly having an adequate time to do the kinds of preparation that for me I've always relied upon. And in this job, I just have not been able to, because of the sheer volume of things and people, to do the kinds of preparation that I've always counted on myself to do up to now. And that's been very humbling. It's been very challenging, and I think there's been a lot of freedom in that for me. But so kind of this going back and forth between feeling prepared or being prepared, and kind of iterating, or maybe even on some level flying by the seat of my pants sometimes, which is very uncomfortable for me. That's not an easy space for me to be in. And somehow trying to get maybe a higher degree of comfort with not always feeling like I have to know the answer before I engage in something or plan for something, but also not being so unable to give things the time or energy that they need before they happen. So I'll just maybe give a little context and provide some illustrations to help communicate better about what I'm talking about. But so when I started in the job that I have now, which is about 18 months ago or so, I had been in a position as a director for the preschool special education or 619 program, and had a team of people, but a small team, and was part of a leadership group of other directors in the Exceptional Student Services Unit. And it was busy and there was a lot to manage, but I felt that I was really able to kind of give things the time that I needed, or to prioritize things the way I wanted to, and to be prepared. And I'm I don't know if any of you know the Myers-Briggs, but I'm an INTJ. So I'm somewhat, I'm an introvert, pretty far on the introversion scale, and I'm a thinker. So I analyze things a lot. I really have always valued opportunity to think and reflect and be prepared to anticipate lots of things before I have to engage in something so that I can kind of be mentally prepared. Wasn't unusual in those early days of taking on that leadership position where I'd, you know, really have analyzed everything, maybe overthinking things. I mean, that I was probably doing some of that. But then when I was asked to take on the blending of the at-risk program with the preschool special ed program, and we moved into a different unit, different physical space, more than doubled the number of people that were working for me. I really no longer had the luxury of being able to, frankly, be prepared for things. And for a while, I tried to continue to do the same level of preparation and anticipation, thinking, etc., for everything that I then had responsibility for. And it's just like physically impossible if I'm going to also have a life outside of work. So I've really had to pull back on a lot of that. And I think for the most part, I'm actually managing that well, but I often feel more rushed or less able in some ways to fully trust myself because I haven't had the prep time that I would prefer or that I maybe am used to. And so just a story to illustrate this a little bit is in the last several months, we had a legislative initiative from our new governor where as a result of some legislation that was passed, a little over 5,000 positions for at-risk preschool students were made available. They got diverted from our kindergarten program into preschool. And so in a very short amount of time, we had to be able to reallocate those positions to districts to be able to start serving children this fall for over 5,000 kiddos. And my team and I did a lot of thinking and planning and anticipation of how that would go. And some of the things that we put in place were extremely, I think, well thought. And we're working on using data to make informed decisions. So there was a lot of work with the data team around planning for how many positions each district could request in order to have more equity in the kind of the allocations across districts and the looking at the saturation points of potentially eligible students already being served and doing a lot of work around all of that. And that a lot of that was in anticipation of more districts requesting positions than actually did. And so we were kind of prepared with this whole thing that didn't end up happening the way I anticipated. And it all worked out fine, but I really had to be able to adjust things kind of in the moment much differently than what I spent a lot of time worrying and thinking about how am I going to make this work. And none of those worries really in the end served me because it didn't happen the way I thought it might. So anyway, feels like I'm just talking and talking. I will stop for a minute and give you all a chance to give me some feedback or help me reflect on this a bit more. Hopefully I've been clear about kind of what the issue is.
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick, Heidi. So team, as you're thinking about what Heidi has presented you with, sometimes the examples are super helpful because you can get a clear illustration of the type of issue that she's grappling with. They can also be a bit of a struggle for you because you can get caught up in the storyline and want to know the details of it or the nuances or problem solve around that particular. She did share that the end result worked out, but you can see where that could be a trap where you could get caught up in the who did that or what could you have done differently. And it's a much bigger issue. She's just using that as an illustration. So as you think of your questions for this one in particular, try to think of things that you couldn't possibly know the answer to and make sure it's not just a question that solves a piece of the storyline for you. I don't mean to make it harder for you, but I can just, this is a really good example of really wanting to ask a question that won't cause defensiveness, like what could you have done differently or what could you have done, would you have done. Like, we don't want anything that sounds leading, and we also don't want to get too practical. She's not asking us to solve this problem. There's a bigger transitional issue that I'm going to frame it as, Heidi, and you jump in if I got it wrong, but it's as she's moved into this different position, her allocation of time is out of sync with her comfort and her patterns and her habits, to be frank, of how she goes about feeling like she's an effective leader. And so how does she reset norms and how does she adjust what's her personal style and preferences to the demands of a new situation? Is that kind of
absolutely
there, Heidi? Okay. All right. So I've taken up too much, but I wanted to kind of reshape it and then let you know there were a couple traps ready for you there, but you're all ready when you feel ready, go for it.
When you're thinking about, you're talking about these things now you're not able to do a little bit, what, thinking about like, what, I don't know if this, what are the kind of top three things that you feel that you aren't able to do that you wish you could?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe all three of those things on some level might relate to follow-up. I used to really pride myself in previous positions on extremely responsive follow-up and very quick, like being accessible to people, I guess is one way to say it also. You know, my email was up to date at the end of each day, and anything I promised, I delivered, usually over-delivered, frankly, or, you know, made sure that I was reliable in terms of offering what I said or thought I should do. And so, you know, whether it's not even being able to see every email that comes in some days or missing some things, not being able to deliver things in as timely a fashion, and frankly, sometimes either choosing not to respond and starting to see that as an actual okay response sometimes, which I've had to really train myself to be okay with choosing not to respond. So I think some of those things just don't sit well with me because I always prided myself so much on being caught up, being quote, you know, frankly, like in control in a way, like knowing, being the one who had read everything, reviewed everything, could be counted on for kind of everything. And not having that same level of kind of comfort that, oh, I got this, I know it, I did it.
What might your team members say about these frustrations and fears you have and how it's impacting their work? What would their perspective of your concerns be?
I think there could be a range. I think sometimes I see team members approach me apologetically, like they know I don't have time for them. That is a disappointment to me. But it's also a reality that sometimes I don't have adequate time for others, or I haven't been able to arrange my time to make that my priority always. I think some of them, frankly, might feel more autonomy and independence in good ways, that perhaps my inability or inability maybe to be more into the kind of details or depths of what they're doing maybe has given them more freedom, if you will. We've worked really hard as a team. I've worked hard as a leader to be able to set a course that everyone can kind of see where we're headed, and then provide hopefully trust and an environment of the kind of teaming that will trust that people are moving in that direction, even if I don't know every step they're taking along the way. I have, you know, some people who approach me with a desire to take things off my plate, or a willingness to. So there's a continuum, you know, there's, I think it's possible that, the over-prepared Heidi, that is no longer around, was in some ways a harder person to be around. And some of that was maybe because, I think we can all probably see why that would be. But, there's some freedom that's come with me as well, I think. And I see a lot of personal growth having happened kind of in this movement, but I'm still very uneasy with almost the things that I don't know that I haven't done, or things that I don't know I have let slip because I simply can't navigate and manage it all.
So you spoke about like this old Heidi and this new Heidi a little bit. So who would you rather go out and have a drink with?
Probably somewhere in the middle, honestly. I think the, you know, the completely unprepared fly by your seat of the pants Heidi isn't always a fun Heidi either, because I am, can be kind of flustered or uncertain, hard to trust myself all the way over there because I don't feel prepared or, but then the over prepared Heidi, you know, could be a little stilted maybe, or like, a little too scripted, or, you know, hard to be impulsive or spontaneous in that, on that end. So yeah, I mean, I think, as I said yesterday in my check-in, one of the things that I'm really, I am conscious of, I'm not sure I'm making great headway, but is really to be focused a little more on being rather than doing. And I think the, you know, maybe the sweet spot of the being present is not on either end of those continuum, but is somewhere, you know, somewhere in the middle. that over-prepared Heidi was very tasky, pretty focused on doing. And the fly by the seat of my pants kind of Heidi doesn't feel like me either, really. And it's not always fully present because I feel somewhat distracted by kind of this uncertainty around how I'll show up. Is it enough just to show up without having read the memo or having a plan for how this conversation is going to go?
What do you like most? I'm going to channel Michelle Obama, but what do you like most about who you are becoming?
Well, I think there's a little bit more lightness. Lightness, I think, in terms of just my presence, maybe. I think because I don't feel like I have to have everything figured out before something starts, I can actually maybe have some more enjoyment in figuring something out, maybe more spontaneously or in the moment, as opposed to kind of having figured it out and then carrying it out in a way that was planned, but maybe didn't actually serve me.
You kind of mentioned finding that kind of middle spot between the two Heidis. What would need to change for you to be able to find that spot?
I feel like I need more white space in my life in general. I say white space, thinking about, you know, looking at my calendar, which within my work day, there's literal, I have no margins. I haven't, doesn't feel like there's adequate time to do just the right amount of kind of the thinking and prep. You know, I think maybe moving away from kind of that almost, that the over-preparedness, I think, you know, on some level, sometimes came out of feeling insecure or not certain. So I had to kind of get everything in order to feel more confidence. And I feel like leaving some of that behind is helpful. But still having enough time to at least be thoughtful or to ensure that I can be fully present instead of feeling scattered, or to give enough thought to, you know, bring to mind the specific goal or the kind of a higher purpose almost for the various things that I might have ahead of me. And I feel like a lot of that is about time. Some of it might be around how I spend my time, but I do think that some of it is just being still without the busyness. So whether it's like the 5 minutes that we had just yesterday and today for kind of prep for this prior to starting, it's those kinds of moments. I used to spend a lot of time like that in my car, frankly, on my way to work and on my way home from work, to kind of do some of that mental shifting, if you will. It's really hard to find those spaces, those white spaces.
If you can imagine your team members or other colleagues that you work with, having a conversation about what they value most about you, what can you imagine them saying?
I think it's really clear to them how much I value our collective work, and their specific contributions towards that common work. There's been a lot of opportunity to develop alignment and coherence in how we're integrating our work across people and across what used to be kind of fragmented projects into a more deliberate and intentional way to show up to the field. And I feel like there's a lot of recognition that that feels more satisfying for people than owning a specific project with a project outcome, but not necessarily seeing how that fit into the bigger picture. So I think that's a piece of it. I think they would say that they probably value my work ethic and the way I show up to work, just in terms of, you know, not being distracted by extraneous things. I'm trying to focus on what will help us move our work forward, as opposed to things that will distract us from that, giving them permission to do that. Those are some of the things I think I would might hear.
Heidi, we have enough time for another question, or if you'd like some time for reflection, you tell us.
I'd be happy for another question if someone has one, and if not, then we can sit and I'll reflect.
Okay. Yeah. Don't rush it. But we have about 4.5 minutes, so take your time to think if you've got another question for Heidi.
What skills do you have that you might not have tapped into yet to be authentically you in this new position?
That's an interesting question. I think I'm going to keep pondering on that. I think I feel like I am fully utilizing all the skill sets that I'm pretty cognizant of. There may be skill sets that I haven't fully developed or are a growing edge for me that I'm not fully utilizing. I will say that some of the skills that I'm using internally with staff around kind of collaboration and coming together for a common purpose, I would love to have more time to dedicate those same, opportunities with external partners to advance our work, and don't feel like I have adequate time for developing those relationships, but so maybe some of it's around that. That's an interesting thing for me to keep thinking about.
And as we transition out of your hot seat, Heidi, and tie it back to the video that Susan shared in Facebook, and so not everyone has seen it, but it was basically a 2-minute blurb on the importance of coaches. And I know you have a coach, Heidi. And so in his example, he's a surgeon, and he talks about having someone observe him do surgery and then help him see what he could not see. So this might be an interesting place for you and your coach or others who can give you that 360 view to explore as well.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So let's take 2-3 minutes, stretch, move, bend, sip of water, run to the bathroom if you need to, quick bio break, and then we'll shift gears again. Wish we had more time. Good thinking. I like have like all these thoughts that I want to like act upon because I think they're going to fall out of my head, even though I have like pages and pages of notes. It's like, good stuff. All right, Jody, you ready?
Sure. Okay. I'm going to apologize up front for my needy cat. Hopefully he's quiet while I'm sharing. So I also struggled with how to decide what to talk about in the hot seat. And I came up with a very practice-specific problem and then something a little bit more personal. So I'm going to start with the personal one this time. Maybe I'll do the practice one next time. But it's very similar to what we've been talking about in some of our other ones. So I feel first like I'm at AA or something. I need to say, I'm Jody Altringer, and I'm a questioner. I am a complete questioner. I am also an INJT. I am so far on the introvert side of things. I also, if you do Enneagrams, I'm a 5, which is the observer. So I suffer from analysis paralysis big time. And that's not a good thing when you have deadlines. So I tend to be one that also just needs to, it's tough for me to move forward because I can't have enough information. I crave information. I take it in. I'm constantly consuming information, research. I geek out. And then it's so hard for me to stop and then create or come up with my own ideas, not just quotes from other people and things like that. And make those, I'm good at making connections, but I'm not always great at articulating them. And of course, with anything, with self-discovery, there are good things. And I've come a long way on my journey of understanding all of this. I didn't really start self-discovery stuff until about 5 years ago when my position switched from an early childhood special ed teacher to an instructional coach. And I was trained in cognitive coaching, got my cognitive coaching certification. And then I thought, I need to figure out myself so that I know what I'm bringing to coaching and can individualize for others, not let my biases get in the way. Because I certainly had many, have many. So that's when I discovered I was an introvert. And that was just like a huge aha moment for me and explained why I struggle in team meetings. I can be very articulate one-on-one, but you get me in a group and I just kind of freeze up like a deer in headlights sometimes. And I get very frustrated with myself. So with this new position now, I'm blessed in that I have the opportunity to do both. I have a lot of one-on-one time with people. I get to coach leaders. I get to geek out with them and talk about research and best practices and all those things that really fill me up. Where I struggle, though, with my questioner tendencies and things like that is when I get into we're a regional entity, so there's 11 of us who do this job. And we meet at least once a month with our supervisor, and we solve the world's problems, right? Systems thinking, things like that. And I am surrounded by a team of extroverts. I think there's only one or two of us who are a little bit more on the introverted side and also questioners. The pace is very quick at our meetings. I've had 5 different supervisors in the 3 years that I've been doing this. And so our meetings, the structure of them have kind of changed over time. And I feel like just when maybe a supervisor is starting to figure out that maybe giving me 15 minutes, you know, to brainstorm with the whole group about a topic isn't going to bring out the best ideas, that it might be stuck in my brain somewhere. So about the time that happens, then we switch to a new leader. And I have a new leader right now. He's only been there since October. And he's very, his communication style is very different than other leaders we've had. And oftentimes he will just throw out a practice problem or a systems issue and say, you know, I need to make this decision by Friday, so I'd appreciate, you know, let's brainstorm. He's big into brainstorming, and that's not my forte. So I feel like at this point, I'm really struggling with how do I best contribute to the team efforts in those group team meetings. I leave those often feeling like the ought self. I ought to be more articulate and succinct with my thoughts. I ought to be quicker with my thoughts. I ought to speak up more. I feel like I'm not contributing in an impactful way at those meetings many times. And I'll just share one example to help you understand the difference. We have 4 content leaders on our team, and they're in charge of our innovation work. So we do 3 innovations: pyramid model and classroom engagement, family guided routines based intervention. The classroom engagement model content lead, she understands me a lot and knows how to tap into my superpowers, which is basically discernment, if that was going to be a top one. And she asked me, she's in charge of doing all the trainings for classroom engagement. And she was explaining how embedded learning opportunities was really missing the target. The data she was getting back from her trainings were that it was missing the mark. People weren't really understanding how to do it and didn't feel like they were able to apply it to their work based on the feedback. So she asked me to come in, which was perfect for me, and observe the trainings, look at all the training materials, and really dissect it. So I got to dig in. She gave me a couple of weeks to do this, came back, we dug deep into some conversations, and she coached me through all of the thoughts in my head I had about it. We came down to a conclusion that she was only teaching the when part and not the how to do embedded learning, just the matrix of when to do those. So we came up with an action plan. If she would have asked me that in a meeting, like if she would have presented it as, okay, it's missing the mark, I need ideas, go, I probably wouldn't have been able to contribute a thing. And that frustrates me to no end. And because I'm analysis, you know, I love to analyze, and I'm also very into craftsmanship and skills, which you can probably hear even in my questions. Sometimes I use the word skills a little too much. I'm looking for ways to channel or strategies of being able to be a little bit quicker on my feet in these meetings, or find a way to contribute, because I know I can't get to the point where I can expect everybody to design the meetings to meet my learning style. So I'm trying to find ways to exercise those muscles and get a little quicker and contribute and feel like I'm contributing meaningfully.
So this is also a perfect example of another sand trap. If we were golfers, this would be the solve it sand trap, because she's asked us, how do I, give me a strategy, what are the ways I could? And yes, that's where we want her to end up, but she needs our questioning to really understand, even though she, of course, we all want the solution, right? She's got to find the solution. So as you, again, I don't want to paralyze you all, but I like to show you the trap early on, that don't like it, say, well, this is what's worked for me, or have you tried? Because the minute anything is like, have you tried, or what would you try, or what would happen if you did, you're guiding her. So it's always back to that. Ask a question you can't possibly know the answer to, even if it sounds really weird. So, you know, what's the shape of something? What would be your theme song that would describe you during a meeting? Anything that lets her, even though she's telling you, I've done a lot of inner work and reflection, how can we notch it up so that she can find some solutions? Okay. So she's given us this scenario of her work right now. She's very in tune with her own personal style. She also understands where she's got shark music, and she understands that the personal style of those around her. So how can she navigate this water, and you know, maybe zoom in a little bit on her request about wanting to be her ideal self, not her ought self. Yeah. There's good richness there for you too, okay?
So Jody, how would your ideal self go about collecting information if questioning was not a strategy you could use?
Yes, you did catch on. I do like to question. I think observing, you know, is I need time to sit in the back of the room and take the temperature of the room, because I'm not always quick to catch on to emotions and feelings and that sort of thing, because I'm already, you know, got 15 different ideas circling in my head and wanting to go read every research article I can, versus paying attention to, are there attitudes, barriers that are, do we need to attend to that relationship piece and the emotions and things like that around a particular topic that we might be discussing as a team? So I think observing is another strategy that I tap into quite frequently. And then also sometimes I just having conversations with others is a strategy for me. Or having someone be a thinking partner with me. Where they're questioning me. They always say questioners don't always like to be questioned. But I do find that if someone, a good paraphrase, that sort of thing can really help me out. So I have tried to, you know, a couple of my team members that I've been a little bit more vulnerable around and told them that I struggle with this, you know, I will ask them sometimes to, if I am having a conversation with me, to really do some paraphrasing for me, help me name it, things like that. So yeah, I think other than questioning strategies that might lend itself to helping me out would be some coaching from others, paraphrasing and observing. I also really like data, but that kind of goes into that research and analysis piece. So I do, you know, part of being a questioner is it has to make sense to me. And I find great comfort in data and knowing that things have evidence and research behind them. So looking at data or collecting data is helpful for me.
Jody, if you were going to describe this issue through your heart instead of your head, would you describe it in using any other words or different words?
Heart. Oh, you know, tapping into those emotions is so hard in the heart. But maybe I have a fear of impulse decisions, and I have a bias against people who don't do their homework, and then maybe make a decision that didn't work. So failure, maybe, I guess getting to failure is a big fear. But yet I do appreciate people who are able to jump in and maybe take a risk, because if we do, you know, sometimes a decision is better than continuing to research, and we need to move forward. So I need to trust leaders more, in that even if they do make a decision, we can circle back around to it, although that doesn't always happen. But I think a fear heart-wise is I don't want to come across as a know-it-all either of, well, wait, recommended practices says this or that sort of thing. And so sometimes I don't speak up because I've read 15 books on the topic and I don't want to sound like a geek, a nerd, a know-it-all. That's the way maybe I go into that questioning mode a little bit more, is trying to come at it from a place of curiosity of where that person is. But I probably, you know, looking at it more from a heart standpoint, is I have a fear of failure if I make a decision too quickly. But I also have a fear of looking like a know-it-all if I sit there and want to research it over and over and over again, or like that I just can't make a decision, and that doesn't feel good to me either. I think I also have a fear, you know, as I'm writing some of these words down, of looking, of coming across as being cold or distant as well, because I sometimes forget about the need for small talk in relationship, and know that we only have so much time at a meeting. And so I've been working hard on keeping my, you know, we have so many different learning styles on our team. We have some folks who are very detail oriented. So they want to put on the agenda that we need to talk for 20 minutes about which of our t-shirts we're going to wear to our trainings. And that drives me insane because I want to spend that 20 minutes talking about inclusion and why aren't we getting our, you know, getting more inclusive settings going in, you know, so I have to keep that in check. And so I do have that fear of if I don't balance some of these things, I can come across as being very much in my own little world and oblivious to that need to make sure everybody's feeling good about where we're at in the meeting. So
what do you think your coworkers in the meeting are hoping to hear from you?
Well, I think, you know, when I think about what team members have thanked me for or appreciated that I do bring to a meeting when I'm being my ideal self, it's that I tend to notice things that maybe have been overlooked. Or I notice I can come up with questions that maybe we haven't asked or conversations we haven't had that will bring a different perspective or, you know, help others make sure they're looking at the whole picture. So I think I tend to notice things that maybe because I'm an observer that others might overlook. And then when I do get to do some coaching, we do have time built into our agenda for coaching and coaching each other around things we're stuck on or you know, if we're having trouble maybe engaging with a certain leader, that sort of thing. And I think people tend to appreciate my cognitive coaching skills and the questions I ask. I do much better coaching others than coaching myself. I can't coach myself. I'm not very good at it.
What are a couple keywords you might use to describe your ideal self? You've talked about ideal and ought and also authentic, but when you think about ideal, what are some keywords that come to mind?
I think my ideal self, I mean, when I was writing down some of my leadership goals and what I was striving for is I want to be a disruptor while keeping the relationship intact. I want to walk that line of inspiration inspiring people to change, but again, keeping that just right amount of tension and not going over that line and coming from a place more of inspiration versus intimidation of, you know, I'm really passionate about early childhood, and sometimes that passion can make me pushy. And so I need to find that balance of where I'm pushing practices. My ideal self is pushing people and their practices. But also maintaining those relationships is important. And that's probably the harder piece for me. And I think ideal self too would be, I want to have high expectations, because I'm hopeful that we can keep the profession moving forward. And so, but part of that too, the negative side of that is I find myself, if I'm attracted to people who are more fountains than drains, and so, but I know it's the people who are losing hope and are a little bit more pessimistic about the profession in early childhood that probably need the coaching and the support the most. But I find myself in a self-preservation mode sometimes and avoiding those folks that maybe need it more and going towards the ones that already are well on their way. And so I struggle. That's going to be my practice thing that I'm going to talk about next time, is deciding where to prioritize my time and effort. But I definitely want to be a practice pusher and disruptor, but you know, there's a lot of cautions that go with that.
Can you think about a time or an experience with someone where you have achieved that balance, where you were pushing while maintaining a relationship?
I think most recently I was supporting a team looking at the moving more towards an itinerant ECSE service model. And just even getting them to a level of self-awareness that the model that they were currently using, they were talking about, it was a co-teaching model. But really what was happening was the ECSE teacher was going in and pulling kids or working with them in the corner. I mean, she was in there the whole time, but it was very much, you could tell who was ECSE. It was very much a multidisciplinary model versus transdisciplinary. So I pushed them a little bit to think about some of those things, and I could tell it got uncomfortable. But I did get a note from a person, and I love the way she said this. And I thought, that's where I want to be. Is she said, you aggravated my brain. You didn't let me off the hook. You kept asking questions from a place of you were, you know, curious. And I was trying not to lead either, but she appreciated that I was persistent. And I trusted the process, and I didn't give up on it. We were doing some fishbone diagrams and things like that too. So, it would have been really easy to let them off the hook a little bit when they got uncomfortable, but I kept going, and I think I got some street cred. They trusted me then. And, the rest of the sessions then, you know, really went well. So, I felt like I got to be my ideal self there, and it worked out. But there are times where I can also say, you know, maybe I pushed just that one iota a little bit too far and had to do some repairing. But I'm getting better at recognizing that. And I guess I'm proud of that at least I recognized that and went into repair mode. Probably 2 years ago, I wouldn't have recognized it.
Believe it or not, Jody, we have just a few minutes left. So it's always that same choice. Would you like another question? Do you need a minute?
If someone's got a question they're dying to ask, I would take another question.
Great. All right.
But if not, I'm drawing and sketching and things as we go here.
Good. We have about three-ish minutes, so fine to ask another one. Okay, girls, no problem at all. Let's do this. We'll take a little bit longer, and we can all do some reflection, of course, but if there's something that comes to your mind, feel free to put it in the chat. It'll get recorded and Jody can think on it later. So it may have been, it might come to you as you take a minute to shake it off and regroup. So let's take 5 minutes. Stand up, move around. And again, if you have another question you want to drop in the chat, that's good. If not, that's fine too. And then I'll bring you back with the gong in 5. All right. And then, Susan, I'm going to just trust that you're going to transition as you need to your car if you haven't already. And then, all right, Catherine, we're ready for you.
All right. I've kind of, like you guys, have kind of debated what I'm going to talk about this time. But one of the things I kind of am struggling with is kind of my role within our preschool team. When we look at our team, it's myself, and I work with the special education preschool classrooms. We have about 55 now, I think. The Early Intervention Services Center, which is like our child find, infant learning transition, that kind of thing. So I work with a preschool director, a Title I coach, and a Title I specialist. And so that's kind of our core. It's a pretty little team. 2 years ago, they kind of took our program out of special education, moved us into our own department, which is kind of neat in some ways that we're not under the umbrella or restrictions of our SPED leadership. But at the same time, I still struggle with feeling that special ed doesn't even have a place at the table sometimes. Like, we've got a lot of pressure to become aligned and to all do the same thing. And I feel like it's a lot of us, like getting special ed to become like general ed or something. An example is last year, the general ed program wrote a handbook for their teachers, and it's pretty thorough. There's a lot of policies and procedures. And so my project this year is to go through it and change it or adapt it so then it applies to all of our teachers next year as well. So I kind of feel like alignment means that gen ed does it first and then SPED has to squeeze into it somehow. And I feel like I'm kind of a broken record when we're in these meetings and I'll say, you know, how does this apply to our kids? How does this apply to our teachers? Our kids, our needs are a little bit different. And I think they get kind of tired of hearing me say that. But I don't know how to get the group to be more thinking of all the kids and all of the classrooms in the beginning and not just as a kind of as an afterthought. You know, we're by far the biggest part of the program, but we get maybe 5% of the attention and airspace. And it's been like that for a while. This year I found myself getting really kind of frustrated with just that lack of just people even remembering that we're there sometimes. And then my response to that is I tend to just shut down or disengage or just stop. Like, in these meetings, I'll just start checking my email or something, because it's like, why am I even here? And it's also kind of puts me in a position of carrying a lot of the load without, you know, like the equity piece of that kind of tends to get a little irritating sometimes. When I look at how we could be breaking out roles and responsibilities, I think there's some changes there. And we've made some positive changes too as a group. You know, like one of the things that we looked at this year, and it kind of came about kind of through a backdoor way, but we were able to really balance out instructional time for our kids, because up until this fall, our special ed kids were getting half of the amount of time in school as our typical kids were. And that seemed backwards to me. So that, at least, like, we're making some gains and some headway there. So I think there are some positives. But as I've been working on the handbook for the last 2 weeks. It's just that I just still feel like we're missing the bigger picture, and we're not one program, you know, where one program is trying to adopt another program and it's not maybe meeting everybody's needs. So I guess my question is, how do I continue to advocate for the needs of our special education programs and assessment team without just being that broken record and without being, you know, like, I need a new way to do it because my approach isn't working.
I don't think I was muted to begin with, so there I don't have to unmute myself. But yeah, so I don't think I think that's pretty succinct. I think you know the sand trap, guys, because it starts with how. But as Catherine said, she's got a mission and a desire to be an advocate, but sees that often falls on quote unquote deaf ears, and she doesn't want her go-to response to be to check out because she's passionate about this. So what questions can we invite her to explore to think about some solutions for going forward?
You continued, Catherine, to have some moderate success in this arena. What things would be different in 6 months?
I think there might be more of an understanding on our team about what our program really is and what it needs. I think we'd be making decisions considering all of our classrooms, and not just a section of them.
What is so important that you would stand in front of a bulldozer to defend it?
It's a good question. I feel really strongly that our preschool students with special needs deserve good preschool. That they should have, their teachers should be as good, and their classroom environment should be as good as their peers.
Catherine, who else in your system is an advocate for that same thing?
We have some, you know, we have some excellent teachers that are strong advocates, that are really good at kind of putting their voice out there and willing to kind of step up and serve on the groups that we form. So I think that's my base where I connect with is our teaching staff. When it comes to the leadership team, we were able to hire, to add a preschool coach, special education coach position this year, which is, they've had coaching on the general education side for about 6 years now, but we've never been able to have that option, so that's exciting. So I'm hoping that balances us out a little bit. It gives us another voice on the team, and she's, I know, will be a really strong advocate for So I'm hopeful that that's going to help shift it a little bit. As far as in the leadership system, I'm kind of a lone wolf with when it comes to this. There's a lot of folks. It's stacked. It's not stacked in favor of special education. But there are definitely folks out there who have similar values that I do, that, you know, you can connect with.
What in your life made you know that this was something that you would stand in front of a bulldozer for? Like, can you trace it back? Do you know the different points in time? How did you develop this passion?
I mean, I think I've always had a heart for, like going back, like through high school, like I worked in a camp for special needs kids, and I've always really enjoyed that kind of work, and liked the kids. I think the opportunity to work, when I started in preschool in our district, I started with the early intervention services, where it's just like our assessment team and our child find and our ILP transition, and getting to work with the families, that's kind of where I knew I was in the right place. I think working with young kids and their families coming through, that's the best part of the job for me, is connecting with families and just hearing their stories and trying to help them out a little bit. I think that part is, that's when I knew I was in the right spot, I guess.
I'm going to pull from Heidi's. Can you give some heart feeling words or just descriptor words? That, what is that feeling? Or like, even in high school, how did you end up going there? Like, how did you know that was right?
Some of it was a pride thing, because I was pretty good at it and a lot of people weren't. You know, so in some ways, like, I've always loved working with kids with challenging behavior, because they don't intimidate me, or they didn't at the time. Not that they do now, but like most people avoided that or didn't want those kids. And I always found them kind of fun and exciting. So there was definitely a pride piece that I felt successful at it. I enjoy the challenge of it. You know, every kid that comes through teaches you something new. So I think there's that piece that's, it's intellectually really stimulating, and that part's exciting. And just the compassion for the families and what they're faced with. You know, there's some pretty remarkable families and kids that come through. That part.
Think of an advocate you admire and think about what they did to make you consider them an advocate, or why you admire him or her. It can be any field. It doesn't have to be special ed.
No, it's a good point. One of my previous directors, and so we've gone through a lot of leadership changes too. I think we're on number 5 now, like just in, I think, 7 years, but she seems to be staying for a couple of years, which is good. But one of my previous directors was probably my biggest mentor in this work. And she continues, I mean, she's left the district because she couldn't do it anymore, but she continues in private practice to really advocate for preschool kids, and she's opened up a private therapeutic center, and she's done some really cool work. And I think her approach is just every day she would just dig in and do it again. You know, she never lost sight of what those big objectives were. And she, you know, she was not working in a healthy system in the district, but she kept, I mean, they were up on her board, like what her program, what the program goals were. And she certainly, everything, all of her decisions were tied back to that. And that was, I think, an example of, and they were all around what's best for kids and families and staff, and trying to protect the needs of our people. So I think just her persistence and patience is something I would love to have.
What are some things you do now to sort of refresh and renew and keep some of that persistence?
I've gotten much better in the last few years at having some pretty good homework boundaries. And I find when I stick to that, I have the energy to keep doing it. I have a team that doesn't have great boundaries, and they're texting. Like, I just turn my phone off when I go to sleep now because the group texts, they don't stop until like 11 o'clock at night, and I don't have any interest in answering them that late. So I've just learned to just pull out of it. But I also have a little kid at home, and so I try once I leave work to make sure that at least 3 or 4 hours is home and not kind of getting pulled. So that helps from a kind of helps balance work and outside of work. And I think at work, my energy comes from either when I get to interact with families or I get to go in classrooms, which I don't get to do as much as I'd like to, but just going out and spending time talking to the teachers, even if it's just sitting around after session and just hearing their how their day was, that's always a good way to end the day for me. And I try to work that in on my way home somehow, that I get a classroom visit, because, or at least a time to talk to the teachers. I think that's what renews you a little bit.
What are some of the trigger words that you hear that make the broken record play?
A good question. I don't know. I can't think of specific words, but there's specific situations. It's often around procedure policy decisions that don't make sense for our kids. And so we meet as a team every Monday morning. It's kind of how we start our week. And it's 2 hours and there's an agenda. And so that's where a lot of those things come up. And what it usually is somebody bringing a draft, a really final copy draft, to a meeting and saying, this is what we're going to do now. Does anybody have any problems with it? And then I'm like, me, you know, like this, and this, I can't, you know, it doesn't seem like it's a good fit. So I'd like it to get to the point where we were discussing those ideas before we drafted up the policy, you know. So I didn't have to be the naysayer all the time. And I don't think it's an unwillingness from the people I work with. You know, they're good people who do care about kids. I think it's just, and some of it is the district, I think, feeds this idea that your funding source kind of drives everything that's important. So it's, you know, Title I's watching up for Title I and SPED's watching up for SPED, and we haven't found a way to come together as much as I know we can. And I don't think it's unwillingness, and I don't think it's that they don't like our kids. I think it's they feel a responsibility for their program and meeting their program requirements and expectations. And I also think sometimes with our director that Title I is, it's just easier. It's easier to figure out. It's easier to plan for. You start the year with the same kids you end with. They're kids without any significant needs. It's not as complicated. You don't have to provide busing for them. Like, it's just a lot simpler in some ways. So you can do a lot. You can make a lot of headway. So I think sometimes the attention goes there. People feel pretty, like, you can just write a policy. You don't have to get it vetted by 18 committees. You don't have to worry about different regulations. So I think the focus naturally goes there sometimes because it's, you can get further, maybe.
Can you describe a time when your voice was heard and what that was like or played a role?
This year we were able to, my director advocated for opening a classroom for kids that are native Spanish speakers, because we had a lot of kids coming through that were their only language at home is Spanish, and then we're sending them to English preschool to work on their speech in a language that's not their own, and it just didn't make a lot of sense. And so we were actually able to, just kind of out of a conversation I had, and I made that suggestion, like, what if we opened a developmental classroom with Spanish speaking staff. And we have a Spanish immersion school in our district. And so she kind of just said, okay, like, all right, let's do it. And it's worked out. It's been really successful this year. We started the year with no kids, and I was a little worried we weren't going to get anybody. And now we have like 20 kids on our wait list. And we have a Spanish-speaking speech therapist and teacher and TA, and it's been a really great classroom for the kids and the families. So that was, you know, something I'm pretty proud of, and it definitely feels validating. And it just feels good when people take your ideas and let you run with it, or run with it with you, I guess. So that was a positive. And that's how a lot of decisions happen around here, is just on a whim, you know? So sometimes those whims are good, and you can get good, you can go good places with them. It tends to be really fast decision-making. And so it's the kind of thing that you need to stay in the conversation, or you just miss your chance. But sometimes I do appreciate our director that she will take action, because I've worked on with other people in the past that just wouldn't, and we would have the same conversation every month in the same frustration. So at least we're moving. I'm just trying to make sure we're moving towards something that can work.
In that situation, what were the conditions that allowed you to be more whimsical on a whim? What was different about it?
I think I caught her in a good, on a good day, really. I don't have that much of a, I tend to voice my opinion probably too much sometimes. I also think that came down with just my director and I without the full team. So there wasn't a lot to weigh it down. It was just kind of one of those things. It just worked out, I guess, that she was in an open place and willing to take a risk on something and willing to commit resources towards it. And we had a principal willing to break. Like, it all just kind of came together really quickly, really well, which is fun. If everything was that easy, it'd be great. It's really when we get the full team together, things get bogged. And there's some strong personalities in our group in good ways, but I'm not as, like, in some ways it's whoever's fastest and loudest gets heard, and I'm not that assertive, I guess.
Catherine, do you want one more question?
If anyone has one.
Okay. Yeah. We have a couple minutes, guys.
If you couldn't use the term broken record to describe the role that you've played in consistently sharing about the role of special ed in these meetings, what are three other words you would use to describe the way that you've engaged in that?
the word nag comes to mind, but I probably isn't where I need to go with that. I think I'm reminding people that, you know, of the rest of the, you know, the needs, advocating. Hopefully perspective building, I guess.
All right, good stuff. As we transition out of Catherine's hot seat, just by way of the group and helping Catherine forward, Catherine, can you remind people the lack of inclusion in AASD, just so they understand?
So we operate mostly on a self-contained model. We just did our summer OASIS, so our LRE reporting, and we were at 97% self-contained and 3% of our kids getting an inclusive opportunity. So not great. We are opening 6 classrooms next year with the intention that they'll be blended. So they'll each have 5 kids with IEPs in a general ed environment, which is a big deal for us. So.
Yeah, I just wanted people to understand the magnitude because it's quite unique. Maybe it makes Dana feel really good about her numbers.
A little behind.
That's okay, and I don't mean to be critical. I just want people to understand when you say that you're overseeing these 55 classrooms, they're self-contained classrooms that you're overseeing every single child on a preschool IEP. Mm-hmm. So if she shuts down, there's no one else that's carrying that voice, okay? All right, so we have maybe 3 minutes for some quick action planning. So here's what I'd like you to do. Before you go back into your real world, take just a minute to think about what today meant to you and what is an action step. If you have time to jump back on and go around the horn and share it, great. If you're not in a place where you can talk or you need to move on, put it in the chat or put it in Facebook and I'll prompt you again. But I'd like you to take 2 or 3 minutes to decide what is your action step between now and our next session, right? So I'll pause myself. I'm right here. You can drop it in the chat, go over to Facebook, or just come back when I do the gong and share it out verbally with anybody that's still here, okay? You can just wave and or drop in the chat, but we can go around the horn really quickly. Heidi, I got yours, but do you want to say anything?
No, just in case someone's not looking at the chat, I'm going to do some journaling related to the experience from the hot seat and some insights that I gained from the questions and that discussion, and then also review my superpowers and watch the video that Susan posted to Facebook. So. Thank you all for this time. It was special.
Yeah, thank you, Heidi. Dana, I'm just going in order of my screen, sorry. You're still muted, sorry, hun. Try one more time. There you go.
Now you don't have to just read my mind and lips. So as far as my action steps, I think, you know, I kind of acted on some of them yesterday. There was a couple of things that made me reminded me of different resources that I have. There was a poem about fear and a video called the Inclusion Dance. And I need to go back and review that and perhaps share some of these things. You know, and maybe figure out how I can get over some of my issues of guilt.
Okay. Jill.
I'm going to reflect also on the great questions that everyone posed to me, and also focus on and think back to where and when things work in terms of transition, and try to journal sort of what are the key elements of those experiences to possibly be able to set the stage to replicate that in other areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Jody?
I have two things, and weird, one of them's around questions. But I'd like to play around with questions and just think about how, if we change the question, how that could change the answer. So I think back to even Jill's question about, you know, when people ask her, how do I know kids are ready for this setting? You know, and I was thinking about the rubric. I'm like, how would the rubric look different if the question was, how do we get those settings ready for the kids? Or even Catherine's question of, you know, how can I advocate more? And then I'm wondering if the question was, how can we inspire others to advocate for special ed? Just things like that. I like to think about questions like that. And then also something that Catherine said really hit me in the gut. She said the fastest and loudest get heard. And I think that's what I'm feeling like with my team meetings. So I'm going to revisit some of Susan Cain's work around introverts and working with extroverts, and read some of her blog posts about that, and go back to her book, Quiet, and look through that a little bit.
And just so people know, as you guys mentioned resources, if you put them in Facebook, I'll always migrate them to our dashboard. Or if you're like, who's Susan Cain? I don't know that book. Don't worry. I'll grab it, or I'll ask the person, and I'll put that in Facebook and our dashboard too, so that you just have a running record, so that you don't have to be like, what is that? Where is it? And Google it right now. Okay. Yeah, good. Catherine?
I think I'm going to, you know, spend some time, quiet time today, thinking about some of the questions. I'm starting to kind of think about when we come back to work and our team starts working together, what maybe I wish that could look like, and how maybe I could, I don't know, just being proactive about trying to maybe change up how we run those meetings a little bit.
Okay. Good. And I will, I didn't get yesterday's audio posted before I jumped on my flight. So that's going to be my afternoon work, is to get both yesterday and today's audio. If anybody ever wants the video, just let me know. But I sometimes think we get caught up in watching how we looked during the hot seat versus listening. But just let me know and I'll post that. But I'll post the audio. I'll post the action steps, and I'll post any resources that I know of that we've shared or mentioned. And then coming next week will be my notes and my invitations for inquiry for you all as well. Okay. All right, girls, that's it. It's Friday. We made it. if you need anything, just let me know or let each other know. And then we'll talk at our next session. All right, bye.